Brethren, it's so good to be with you tonight. We are at the beginning of our reporting presentation, and it is wonderful to be able to be here with you in Athens. And the screen will be coming up in just a moment. That is not my bird. Bing desktop changes the picture on my desktop regularly every day, and so that's always a surprise what it's going to be next. Brethren, we're over in Palau and we're very far away from you, and so I have not spoken to this many people in a very, very long time. We usually have about between 20, 25 in our congregation, and so I think this one section here would be what I'm used to. Maybe I'll just speak to you tonight and the rest can just listen. Brethren, we are very excited about the work in Palau and how things are going. They're moving forward. You know, every culture has distinctive characteristics about it. And one of the unique things about Palau is that it has what they call customs. And there's a funeral custom, and there is a wedding custom. There's also a first childbirth ceremony that is another custom. And brethren, they take these things very seriously. And they are involved in the customs, and they're expected that they're going to be off work for several days if there's a funeral. And here you see one of the funerals that took place this year. Brethren, the funeral ceremony, the relatives of the deceased will come and stay at the house of the deceased for several days. The host family will be providing food for hundreds of people during that time. And the interesting thing is that those people who come, every one of them will give a donation of money. And depending on how close you were to the deceased, you may be assigned an amount of money to give. And in this case, this low to moderate to income family for this funeral, it happened to bring in $32,000. And so this is one of their customs. This is expected and this is normal in the island country of Palau. So these customs are different than what we're used to, aren't they? That's like an insurance policy for us. Well, that is their insurance policy, and that is their custom. In Mark 2, verses 11 and 12, we read, "Immediately he arose, took up the bed, and went out in the presence of them all, so that all were amazed and glorified God, saying, 'We never saw anything like this.'" You know, they were amazed. They were amazed, brethren. And that's what's unique to us and where we're working and being able to work with the members of the Lord's church there. Brethren, there are some things that are amazing, like the practice of the funeral custom. And so tonight we want to share with you some of those amazing things that are different than what you may be used to here. One of the things that's different is the speed limit. We have a 15 miles an hour speed limit in a residential section. We have a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in the business district, but if you get out on the open road in Palau, the speed limit goes up to 25 miles per hour. That's right. That's the top. That's as fast as you can go. My wife was driving the van here and got up to 45 miles per hour, and my 12-year-old daughter, who's not with us tonight, said, "Mom, slow down. You're going to kill us because you're not used to going that fast, huh?" So, brethren, just things that are a little bit different, and sometimes things that are amazing, things that are not typical for what we know here. For those of you who don't know us, my family and I live and work in Palau. This is the church in Palau. My family and I live and work in Palau, and my 11-year-old son and 12-year-old daughter are not able to be with us tonight. They're spending the night with grandparents. And, brethren, we very much enjoy being a missionary family to Palau and Chuuk and these islands in Micronesia. We've been there 4.5 years. We were in Saipan for 5 years before that and have no thoughts of leaving. Really, that has become home, and frankly, this is a strange land. When we come back to the States, it takes us several weeks to get used to things like the speed limit and just a variety of other things that we can't go into. But you know, the funeral, there's also a first childbirth ceremony where when the woman has her first baby, then all the family gathers together and they build a scaffolding, a staircase up to a landing, and they cover her in oil, and then doing a little island movement, she's supposed to climb the staircase and be presented to the family. That's the first childbirth ceremony. Well, it's things like that that we have to understand in order to be able to share the gospel with these people. And what I mean by that is we have to be able to understand the culture, have to be able to understand how they think in order to talk to them about the Bible. We have been impressed by being back here. I haven't been home in 2 years. And so coming back here and seeing some of the ways of thinking that are different between there and here, brethren, it's very strange. Well, we have to understand how they think and how they act in order to be able to share the gospel with them. You know, that's true in the Bible. Paul talks about the Galatians. Here we have a map of the Pacific. And Paul talks about the Galatians in Galatians 3 and verse 1. It says, "O foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you, that you should not obey the truth before whose eyes Jesus Christ was clearly portrayed among you as crucified." You know, Paul in this epistle presents them as a fickle people. Well, you know, if you're going to go and work with these kinds of people, well, then we're going to have to understand the people that we're talking to. Am I right? And the same is true in Titus chapter 1, verse 12. Here, Paul says to rebuke them sharply that they may be sound in the faith because they're liars, these Cretans. And so, brethren, we have to think about the culture of the people that we're talking to. In 1 Corinthians 6, verses 15 through 20, Paul talks about the need for purity because these are a people who have been worshiping with the temples of prostitution. Think about the people of India today with their many gods. Brethren, it's just different. And so going into another culture, as you know, we must think about and understand how they think in order to share the gospel with them. So in this report, we'd like to share with you some of the amazing things from the islands. And some of them are cultural things. We'll share with you some of the unique things and remarkable things that we see on a daily basis. And let's start by looking at that in Chuuk. Brethren, the people of the islands have their houses and their traditional leader homes. This one is from Palau, and here's an inside shot of that building. But brethren, traveling over to the island of Chuuk, it's a little bit different. They have different customs, even though the islands are about 1,500 miles apart. That's a pretty far distance. But until recent history, these islands were not connected really at all. The only transport between the two was by canoe on open water. And brethren, that's difficult today. It's difficult at any time in history. Many lost their lives by leaving the island, and so not too many did that. They just stay on their own islands. And so their customs and their practices really do not overlap. Their languages have some ancient connection, brethren, but really not a lot. Well, one of the things that's unique about the people of Chuuk is that they are itinerant. In other words, they move around a lot. And so we may baptize some in one area, and then we go back to work with them and build them up. And brethren, they've moved to another part of the island. We have a congregation in Wechip, or rather in Epinu, and then another one over there where the map says Muan. Well, these brethren may be baptized in these areas and then go and move and live with family up in the north part of the island, Pianissinae, the very top there. Well, brethren, if they do that, then it's very difficult for us to grow the church. I'll go in sometimes ready to have a certain set of classes because of a new convert, a certain brother that we want to see grow and become a leader. And here he has moved to another village, and there's no one to work with, so we have to change the entire plan. Say, well, Joey, why don't you go pick him up? Because, brethren, it takes an hour because of the road conditions to get to Pianissinae. Actually, it takes an hour and a half to get to Pianissinae. And then we would get there and then start asking around, do you know where such and such lives? Or what does he look like? And so we ask around and then finally find him. And, brethren, it's just very difficult to do, to find the house and then make it back to the area where we're staying. And so they're moving around a lot, makes it difficult for us to grow the church. Two of our preachers, our only two preachers, rather, I should say, Atrico and Kendi in the Epinoop congregation, moved to Guam. And so, brother, we have no leaders there, no men to lead the worship services. And so we're going down to some others who never thought that they would be imposed on to lead, never thought that they would be expected to lead. And here they are doing the entirety of the worship service. It's very interesting sometimes. And so this moving around makes it difficult to grow the church. You know, brethren, it's hard to grow when there's nothing to work with. In Psalm 33, verse 6, we read that the Lord... Let me share with you first Frog's baptism. His name is Frog, and brethren, he's always gone by Frog. I've wondered how he was able to find his wife. He is married. How he was able to find his wife with a name like that. But anyway, he did. And Frog is baptized here. Now, you may have noticed that Frog's hand did not go down all the way under the water. And so we did that baptism again. We always do the baptism with two people. One who's going to perform the baptism, and the other who's going to watch and make sure they go all the way under, right? Because brethren, they're going to be buried, right? Go all the way under that water. And so our preacher at the Naaman congregation, Hermas there, is going to baptize him again, make sure that Frog goes all the way under the water. But Frog is one of those who moved to a different area shortly after his baptism. Brethren, he's all the way up in Moen, up on top of a hill, and our vehicle couldn't make it there. We tried, and it could not make it there. And so, brethren, it's just one of those situations where it's almost impossible to get to him in a day's time and have any time to do anything with him once we get there, considering the time it takes to get back. And this is just normal, the normal kind of challenge that we face on every trip to Chuuk. And so we thought to ourselves, well, what can we do with this? What can we do with this? In Psalm 33, verse 6, the Lord can make something out of nothing, brother, but we can't. We got to have people. So we thought to ourselves, well, what can we do with this? And the answer is, we can do church planting. You know, take advantage of the fact that we've got brethren who, like in Acts 8, verse 1, they're scattered abroad when everywhere preaching the gospel. Well, brethren, we can use that. And so we talked to Frog and his wife up on top of that hill and said, Frog, we need to start making a worship service here at your house. Now, Frog may not be there when I go back to Chuuk on the next trip. He may be back down in the town area. But, brethren, we can certainly use their itinerancy to our advantage and use that for church planting. While we're on the subject of baptisms, here is Bera's baptism. She was baptized during a Pacific Islands Bible College course this past summer in Chuuk. She's the one that we usually rent a vehicle from when we go to Chuuk. And so that has turned out to her coming to the Lord. Chuuk can bring some very interesting situations. They're a very, very poor people. Now, it's not like in Palau. Like I said, they're two different islands and two different people. But in Chuuk, they're very, very poor people. And Atrico, the preacher I mentioned to you that had gone to Guam, is her son. And brethren, he's the breadwinner of the family. You know, it's funny that I say that because their main food is breadfruit. They just crawl up in the tree and get it. Well, he's the breadwinner. He's the breadfruit winner in the family, I should say. So he moves to Guam, and the family's going to have to go through a transition time where the younger sons get the idea that they're going to have to start providing for the family. But it's going to take a while. Because of the Chuukese mindset and the way that they think, all I can tell you is, not that it's right, because it's not right, but all I can tell you is, 3 months after he leaves, they will get in gear and start bringing in food for the family, whether it be breadfruit or fish or going to town and getting a job and working for a dollar an hour. That's true. Whatever it be, but it'll take about 3 months for them to wake up and get in gear. So during that time, and that would be the case with almost any family in Chuuk, I don't know why, but that's their style. So, Basina comes to me after on one of the trips there and says, I'm very sorry. We ate the bread for the Lord's Supper. The church is meeting in their home, and there's a small amount of bread and of grape juice there in the home that they're to save and use for Sunday. Well, brethren, I know the family's thinking, and I know her thinking, and I know that it was heavy on her heart, but I also know that, brethren, they were just out of food. Those other sons did not wake up fast enough and get moving fast enough, and her husband, who has passed away now, but he was crippled at the time, brethren, they just had no other choice, and so she very heavily hearted told me, I'm sorry, we ate the bread for the Lord's Supper. Well, brethren, I can't say that's okay, because it's a Lord's Supper bread. You know, it's a church's materials. And so what I did was tell her, Basina, you know, that's for the Lord's Supper. I understand why you ate it, but let's try to not do that and try to get those boys moving and try to get those boys preparing the food so it doesn't turn into that situation. And then we went and got the family some food to help with that. But that's the kind of thing, you see? That's the kind of thing that we're running into, and that's the way that they think. That's the mentality of the people. And then we have to understand it in order to be able to work with them, in order to make sure that, yes, there's going to be the Lord's Supper emblems on Sunday morning. You know, this island, Chuuk, sometimes they run out of grape juice. And so we make the grape juice out of raisins. And you know what? Sometimes they run out of raisins. This island sometimes runs out of flour for making from scratch the bread. And so these brethren, we've had to really work with them to help them to understand, you've got to get these things and store them so that when the island runs out, you don't run out and you're able to have these things. And so working in the islands brings some amazing and interesting situations. Brethren, we're always on the lookout to stretch the Lord's dollars, to save money. And one of the ways that we can do that in Chuuk is by staying in a campground. Now, my wife and children don't go to Chuuk. I go there alone. They've never been. Someday they'll be able to go. But I go there alone. And so staying in a campground, in a tent, is okay. I would not ask that of them. But brethren, the reason we want to do that is because the hotels are expensive there. Chuuk is not a tourist destination. It does not have a lot of tourists coming in there in order to keep the prices low of services for foreigners. So foreigners who come in, they're going to pay. And staying at the hotel, brethren, it will run about $100 a night, which for me is on the higher end, and we prefer to not do that. And so we're in the process of building a campground so that I can stay there. And we've moved a lot of that dirt and a lot of those things out of the way so that I can stay there and stretch the Lord's dollars. It's because the hotels are expensive because there's not 24-hour island power. Island power runs about 12 hours a day. And if you have a business, the other 12 hours a day, you're going to have to supply your own electricity. So these hotels are running large gas-powered generators to supply power to the hotel. Well, that is the worst way and the most expensive way that you can provide power in any situation. There's no coal on the island. We don't have a nuclear power plant there. And so it's gas-powered generators, and that's what makes the hotels more expensive and all of the services there in Chuuk more expensive, unless you want to live like a local, which is kindly the direction that we're moving in, here. And so that's something that we do to try to stretch the Lord's dollars. I mentioned to you the Pacific Islands Bible College. We have this. It's not a building. We don't have a building there. But rather, we just bring out individuals from the States who pay their own way to come out and teach a college-level Bible class. It is the most uplifting thing that we do in the islands. It encourages the brethren. Church attendance is always up after a Pacific Islands Bible College course, which lasts usually 3 weeks, five nights a week for 3 weeks, 2 hours per night. So it's a serious commitment for the islanders. And brethren, it builds them up and encourages them. We love Pacific Island Bible College time. We try to have one course in each of the islands each year. Since I was with you last, now let's switch over to Palau. Huh? Since I was with you last, two typhoons have hit Palau. The first one took out several villages on the east side of the large island, Babeldaob, and the other one completely devastated the northern island of Palau, of Kayongol. And brethren, they evacuated all of the people. Only two buildings were left standing. And it has been a major catastrophe for Palau. The people, this happened in November of 2013, and the people have not been allowed to move back yet. The devastation was complete. Power systems were destroyed, the water systems were destroyed, and so everything is being rebuilt from scratch. The people who lived in Kayongol had to move down to the southern main island chain of Koror, and they were in a shelter for a while. And you know what happens to them then? They're encouraged to go and start finding their family members to move in with. Yes, that's right. And so it doesn't matter if there's room in the house or not. They're just expected to find family members and move in with them since November of last year. Yes, that's right. And so they have a different way of thinking about family and moving in than we do. That's why the people of Chuuk go around to different houses on the island and are always moving around. Brethren, the family members of Kayongol had to move down to the southern island of Koror and start living with family. And their attitude is, we just move over and make room. You know, their houses don't just hold a nuclear family like yours and mine do. They'll hold maybe 10 to 15 people. And it doesn't matter if there are enough beds for everybody. Everyone will have their own pillow. Everyone may have their own blanket. And they just fall where they fall. You come home late at night, well, all the beds are taken, the couch is taken, well, then you're just on the floor, and that's okay. The children just fall where they will. But you know, it's very different than what we know, isn't it? And it's a different way of thinking. Palau is a country of 21,000 people. 21,000. You know, such a small group. And because of that, brethren, everybody knows everybody. It's like a high school, you know? Everybody knows everybody, and everybody's life overlaps together. And so this idea of 15 people in one house together, that's just normal life for them. Well, that's part of that thinking that we're talking about and understanding where they're coming from and what they're doing. And it's a very close community. It's a very close community. We have pictures here of what the storm did to our church building, one of them, and then a few others. Brethren, the church building in Palau was harmed, not severely, but there were several things that were affected by the storm. Some of the churches here in the States sent funds for repairs after the storm, and this congregation did. Brethren, we are very thankful for those funds, and the people of Kayongol are very thankful for them, very thankful for them as well. In Palau, and in all of the islands, of course, we're involved with outreach, but outreach is different in the islands than it is here. You know, door knocking really does not work in Palau because of another custom that they have. And that is, if you're going to go onto somebody's property, you really have to have permission first. Have to have permission before even going onto the property. One time we went onto some property that we were thinking about leasing to build a building. Huh? And we had talked to the owner and figured it was fine to be on the property. And someone else drove up while we were there and said, did you know that you need to have permission before coming on this property? And so we explained the situation and they understood. But it's a real part of the culture. So going door knocking is a little bit of a strange situation. If I don't have permission to go onto the property, then the proper thing for me to do is stand at the edge and call out. One of my neighbor's name is Mike. And so I'll say, Mike! And call out from the property and get permission before even stepping foot onto the property. There was a ice cream truck. There's one ice cream truck in Palau. And so there's an ice cream truck that went onto one of my neighbor's properties. And I was going over to... Everybody was going to the ice cream truck. It wasn't just me. All the kids were running. It's an ice cream truck. They're flocking to it, you know? And so I was going over to the ice cream truck and had a skip in my step because I was excited. Going to get ice cream for the kids. And as I started onto the property, I noticed the man who was walking away from the truck to his house. He was walking and he froze like this. And I said, something's wrong. And so maybe 5 or 6 feet onto the property, I froze also. And then I realized what was happening. He was the owner of the property. He was waiting to see if this foreigner was going to be respectful of the custom or not. Usually the foreigner won't be because they don't understand. Most foreigners are in Palau for 1 or 2 years on workers' contracts and then off again. So he froze and then I froze. And I said, sir, may I come onto your property and go to the ice cream truck? And big smile on his face, and yes, you may, that's right. Well, see, that's the culture, having to understand, because if I didn't do that, brethren, I would have offended him, and he would have tightened up toward me, maybe I'm going to meet him later and have a chance to talk to him about the gospel, and he's going to remember this is that disrespectful foreigner. So no, we can't do that. We've got to understand. Well, since that time, I've developed a good relationship with this man, and we're hoping to be able to share the gospel with him. Well, that's one unique thing about how the culture affects the outreach efforts that we do. So we don't do door knocking. Rather, what we do is we do a booth at a Friday night market. We give away Bibles. You know, that's advertising and it's giving. It's earning a good name in the community. And this is something that we can do that is not offensive toward any of the people and not rejected in any way at all. We have one-on-one contacts, of course, that we do. And then, brethren, we also, something that I'll get into in just a moment, we have a TV station where we give away Bibles. And I got a call the other day. The people who are house-sitting for us went in and answered the phone and took down a note for someone who was asking for a Bible. So these are some of the things that we're doing in order to spread the word in Palau and get the Bible into the hands of people and have the opportunity to talk to people about God's word and lead to things like this, Vilma's baptism. Vilma is a Filipino who's married to a Palauan and one of our faithful members. And so these are some of the things. Understanding the culture is critical to being able to do the Lord's work in the islands because, like we said, it's a close community. Here's our church building. It is right off of the main road. And brethren, it is an excellent location. We were very, very blessed in having this location for the building. In a few minutes, I'll show you the finished first floor of the building that we had a campaign for earlier this year. Like we said, it is a close community, and brethren, everybody knows everybody. We have a lawyer because of the TV work, and our lawyer is one who sits in the bleachers with us because our sons do judo together. We do an exercise. We're part of an exercise program, and our doctor is one who's in the exercise program with us. And so in this small community of 21,000 people, our lives overlap with the other members of the community in countless ways. And so that is why it's very important to have a good name and a good reputation, especially as a minister, especially as someone who's wanted to represent Christianity. Brethren, we must maintain that good name. And so because of that, we've gotten into the community in a variety of ways. With the TV work that we're doing, we've done a lot of things for nonprofit groups around the island. This is a World No Tobacco Day. My wife, Tammy, takes part in all of the walk runs that take place on the island, and that's one of the things that you're seeing here. We've gotten involved with coaching soccer and different clubs on the island in order to be out there. Because one thing that's very, very true in the islands, in Palau, if they don't know who you are, they won't listen. They see that church building, they see the sign, Palau Church of Christ, but if they don't know anything about it, they will never darken the door. In that community of 21,000 people, they're used to knowing, you see? They're used to knowing about people and knowing what's going on. So if they don't know, well, then it's a closed door. And so that's why we've tried to get really involved and let people know who we are. And so now they say, okay, I know that guy. He's a preacher for the Church of Christ. He works with that Moving Mountains Television. They're doing free work for people, nonprofits. He likes to smoke pork. And his wife is active in a variety of things. Now they know a little bit about us, and so now they'll talk to us about things and let us into those inner circles. And so it's exciting. It's an exciting time in the work there in Palau. You know, we have regular members of the Lord's Church. Some shine in being faithful. Others have shown themselves to be in it for the money. Some are lazy, and some work very, very hard. And speaking of working hard, we had a campaign in June of this year to finish the first floor of the church building. And brethren, we had a group from the St. Andrews Road Church of Christ come out and help us with that building construction. We were able to get all of the concrete work done, including the floor being poured and finished, and the interior walls were framed out. Much of the plumbing was done, the electrical was started, and the interior stairs were built. After they left, the windows and doors were installed. And so now what we have to do is just finish the work that has already been started and finish those projects. Brethren, these campaigners went out in that full island heat, that full island humidity. Brethren, it's humid. It's like 100% every day. And they went out there in it, shoveling that dirt and shoveling that base course, putting it under the building, under the floor that you see right now. And they worked hard. It was a great campaign. We had lectures each night. And so just a wonderful time. This will be a great improvement on the church building, and it will help us to draw visitors. The islanders, they really look for something to be established before they will agree to get involved with it. They want it to be finished before they get involved. Otherwise, it feels like it's not ready yet. It's not ready for them yet in their mind. And so we're excited to have this project done and be able to be meeting in it very, very soon. I'm telling you, the night that we left, the locks were not installed on the door. And so it was just left open, and I left a note on the Lord's Supper table for the brethren. Do this, do this, do this. And they did. So Ben Osebek is one of our members there in Palau. And we have a big turnover in the church in Palau. The Filipinos, like other foreigners, are only there for maybe 1 or 2 years, and then they're off back to the Philippines. And so we baptize, and then they leave. They go back to the PI. And so when it comes to our Palauan members, we have 4 men who really are able to help and to do that. That was a finished pictures of the church building there. And so Ben is one of our 4 men. One of our men, here's Ben with his son Omas. One of our men is very shy, and he really doesn't like to lead. He will if I really pressure him to, but he doesn't like to do it. Another of our men is actually the delegate for Kayongo State that was wiped out. And he is constantly traveling and cannot be depended on to be a fixture in the leadership of the congregation because he's gone so much. Another one of our men often misses. Now, this is Ben again. Another one of our men often misses because of his work, and so he can't be depended on either. But Ben can, to a degree. Ben helped us with building the church building, but brethren, Ben is a former prisoner. He spent 25 years in prison. Now, he's my friend, brethren. I really feel dear to this man. But 25 years in prison, and he is a recovering alcoholic. He's a recovering alcoholic. But when he's good, brethren, he's great. And when he's right, he'll do anything for the church. He's the one that I can call and say, oh, after the campaign group left, we've got this, this, and this to do, and it's got to be done in the next couple of days. Can you come? He says, I'm on my way. And he'll come. The other day, I'm running out of time. The other day, he was at the house, and I leaned down in his car, and I smelled alcohol. And brethren, I'm close with Ben, so he needs me to call him on the carpet. He needs me to help him to not fall back into that way, because he's come out and fallen back about 10 times. Okay, and I need him, brethren, not only for the being dry part, but I need him in the church desperately right now. I don't have anybody else that I can really depend on. And so I smell alcohol inside the car, and I said, Ben, you've been drinking. And he's offended. He says, no, I'm going to talk to you the way that he talked to me, right? No. I said, Ben, I smell alcohol. He said, no. And he got up in my face and went like that. And the brother, I jumped back because he got really right up in my face. But you know what? I did not smell any alcohol. And so I stuck my head back down in the car, and yes, I smelled alcohol. I said, Ben, maybe you spilled it in the car from before or something. And he said, no. And so he stuck his head down in, and we're both thinking and smelling, and he said, the cans. His wife had been collecting aluminum cans to recycle, add a little money to the family's income, and that's exactly what it was. There was a plastic sack of aluminum cans with all kinds of different aluminum cans in the back of this hatchback car, and that's what it was. So Ben's a recovering alcoholic, and He's trying with the very best of his ability to stay dry. And he's doing it. You know, when he needs the bush cutter, that's a weed eater. They call it a bush cutter. When he needs the bush cutter, the church's bush cutter, he'll call me up. Maybe he's found somebody who will pay him to cut their grass or something. And I always loan it out to him, brethren. Because you know what? He always brings it back in good working order. And so he can be dependable and he can be depended on. And he's proven that. And so right now, I'm telling you, the church is in his hands. The church is in the hands of a former prisoner, recovering alcoholic, who's been dry for about 4.5 weeks now. But you know what he said to me? When I'm talking to him there at the church building, telling him the situation and where the other men are, everyone thinks somebody else will do it, right? So I'm explaining to him the situation with all of the other men and that I need him to be my guy, need him to be my good helper during this time. And he gets real serious and he says, I will not go to a custom. Brother, they don't say that. They always go to the custom, okay? He says, I will not go to the custom. I will not miss a Sunday. I will be here and I will do it. And brethren, I called him about 3 days ago and he's doing it. He got the bush cutter from my house. He went and cut the church grass. He's keeping it up. He is dry and he is doing the job. It may be that my being gone and his being forcefully depended on in this situation may be exactly what he needs in order to help him stay dry. It's real responsibility. It really matters and he understands it. And so we'll see how it goes. Please pray for Ben. And frankly, we are excited about what's going to become of him and with him. These brethren, I'm telling you, they wanted me to not just write out the sermon for them while I'm gone. They wanted me to write out the entire worship service. Write out the prayer. Write out the song, or pick the songs for us. Put it down on the page. Write out the Lord's Supper prayer. Write out what we say at the Lord's Supper. They're just shy and timid. It's part of their culture. And so we did. We did every part of it. Got them 3 full worship services so they can just recycle those 3 until I get back in a couple of months. But brethren, you know what that tells me? It doesn't disappoint me. And we're encouraging them to be able to do these things on their own. But I'm telling you, it tells me that they're taking it seriously and they understand it's going to be on them and that they can do it. In just a couple of minutes that we've got left, let me tell you about Moving Mountains Television. We wanted to do a live call-in TV show with one of the TV providers there in Palau, and it's just too expensive. And so we looked into starting our own TV channel. We were able to do that very inexpensively, and that's exactly what we've done. We have our own channel. And we can put anything on there that we want to, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's channel 67. So if you ever come to Palau, you know what channel to tune into, right? But brethren, in this situation, we're able to really advertise the church. We show In Search of the Lord's Way and the programs that you see up there. Not only, about 90% of our programming is material from the Churches of Christ, like from Apologetics Press and GBN and other groups, Focus Press. And so that has really helped us. But in addition to that, about 10% of our time, we're doing community programs. And that's just to reach out to the community. Give them the opportunity to get to have a voice. And you see, my wife here has done a fitness video. If you'd like a copy of it, brethren, just let me know. We'll get it to you, of course, for free. But the thing about this fitness video is, here's a show that I have done. Brethren, the thing about the fitness video is, have you ever seen a fitness video where the leaders of it were modestly dressed? We've made a fitness video where the people are modestly dressed. How about that? We can air that on the channel. And so this is just some of the things that we're able to do, get involved with and provide. And doing things for these nonprofit groups like what you see here just helps us get our foot in the door in Palau and establish the kind of people we are, the giving spirit of the Church of Christ in Palau by helping the people of Palau. It just kindly, in their mind, shows that we are a giving people, and that will help draw people to the church. So that's Moving Mountains Television, and really just excited about those things. To do mission work in the islands, a good name is important. In fact, the name of the Lord is the greatest of all. Shall have no not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. You know, our task in the islands is to grow the church, to sow the seed, and really ultimately to glorify the name of God. That name is worthy to be glorified, right? It is worthy of all the praise and all the honor that we can give. And that's why you're here tonight. We've come here to worship God, to glorify the name of God. And so we strive to glorify His name over there, and that's what you do here as well. So whether it be there or here, the goal is the name, that the name of God be glorified. And this evening, if you're not a Christian, would you like to glorify His name by the way that you live your life? Would you like to glorify His name by having Him first in your life and giving Him on a weekly or even daily basis that praise and honor that He deserves? If you need to get your life right with God and you're willing to repent of past sins, put those things behind you, confess His name before men, and then have your sins washed away in baptism and start that life with Him, if you have that need or anything at all, won't you come right now as we stand and sing?